First of all, I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, Joe Knowles, and the audience, Richard Lawrence and Tim Strickland. I'm going to show some work that, actually two studies a little bit, where we're starting things. We're just the first couple years of data. But it's an integrated type of work where we're looking at various aspects of biomass production with elephant grass and looking at the environmental components as well. Elephant grass, that is Penicillium purpureum, but also we've had a recent article there by Chemisquay that suggests that we change the nomenclature to Centris purpureum because of similarity based on molecular data. So you might see a couple different Latin names for it. We've tried a number of different. This is in the southeast, and we're working with USDA down in Tifton, Georgia. We've tried a number of different biomass crops. When I first came in 2003, we tried to do a test to see which biomass crops would be the best. And we've included miscanthus, bigantius, switchgrass, elephant grass, or napier grass, another name for elephant grass, as well as energy cane and a few others. And as you can see here, in our region and in the far southeast, the miscanthus giganteus and switchgrass heads out. We have reproductive growth fairly early on in the summer. This was probably taken in July, whereas elephant grass will continue to grow vegetatively. So we can continue to pile on some of the biomass over that period of time. And, of course, this all has to do with photoperiod sensitivity and the hardiness zones as well. Elephant grass will grow pretty well in the hardiness zone of 8 and 9. There are some locations in the hardiness zone 7 that they're trying out, even up into North Carolina. But the survival rate is not that good. Also in the ecoregions, 232, 231 are basically the best plate regions for the growth. In some yield trials that were done back in the late 90s or in 2001, Joe Boughton tested napier grass against Tifton 85, which is a Bermuda grass, and the switchgrass, which there it was. Trying to remember the variety, but anyway, it was the variety at the time. And over 5 years, even in Athens is fairly north. It's northern Georgia. The production of elephant grass was much higher. So again, that was another reason to continue to look at napier grass as a bioenergy crop for the dedicated bioenergy crop in the southeast. We did a study. We started back in 2005, put in a study where we're looking at different feedstocks, and we didn't put any inputs on. And we noticed in the literature that there was a lot of literature saying that they really don't need much as far as inputs, either water or fertilizer. Well, we decided to try test it and see how far we could go with it. And depending on the feedstock, switchgrass took a little bit longer to establish, so that the decline in yield took a little longer. This was over 4 years we did this test, and this is a publication by Joe Knoll et al. And we found that after 2 years, the yield decline was significant. And mainly that was not water, that was fertilizer. So we know that we have to put on a significant amount of fertilizer to replenish the soil for the production of these crops. So in our objectives, we went from there, and we tried to put in a few trials to determine inputs for the optimum yields and sustainable production, determine the effects of fertilizer treatments on carbon and nitrogen uptake and available soil nitrogen, and determine management practices that can reduce inputs and reduce sustainable yields or retain sustainable yields on marginal lands. One location in this first trial, we were in Shelman, Georgia. We actually irrigated. We have three irrigation treatments and 6 fertilizer treatments. And this was probably taken in August, where we had the production was up over 4 meters. Most of the time that we get production at 4 meters or higher, and you can see that it hits the irrigation cables. We're able to keep the irrigation going, though, for throughout. And the 3 fertilizer treatments is a factorial, 3x2, with nitrogen and potassium. And we had those rates there. And we were doing a lot of things. We're looking at greenhouse gas effects, Richard Lorentz and others. We've got carbon-nitrogen cycling, looking at the taking cores and then looking at the above-ground biomass. Also water availability, looking at that. So this is it's an ongoing study that's going to probably we'll be keeping this going for a long period of time to look at the sustainability of these different practices and look at the effects on the soil as well. We established these in 2010, so we had a full year of production, and we just cut it off. And then we started the treatments in 2011. And then, so these are the results after two years of the treatments. Basically, if you look at, let's see if I can find the mouse. Okay. Basically, if you look at the yields underwater, obviously water was important. And it was significant both in 2011 and 2012. The yields were much higher under higher irrigation. However, the nitrogen, the fertilizer treatments really did not have an effect on yields. And that's pretty much like we had seen before in our previous studies. From that previous study, that the first 2 years, it's mining the soil. You don't really see any differences. We were expecting to see differences this year and then in subsequent years. So you can see that it's depleting the soils because the amount of nitrogen uptake exceeds the amount that we've been putting on. And the carbon-nitrogen uptake aspects are such that you get a little bit higher efficiency of your nitrogen at lower rates, and very low on the high rate. So we'll see how things go over the next few years. Unfortunately, this year we had a problem. In August, we got a call and said, "Oh, your napa grass is on the ground. It's really badly lodged." This doesn't normally happen. Napa grass is pretty sturdy. It stays up tall. And said, "Well, okay, we'll go over and look at it." And sure enough, it was bad. And so we had to figure out what to do. Well, our biomass harvester is very difficult to really harvest anything on the ground. We knew that if we maintained it on this at this point, that it probably would not straighten up. So we had to go in and harvest it early in August. And you can see here the rainfall. The black line is the average. Let's see, we had 2011 was yellow, 2012 was the green. That was below average those 2 years. So obviously the irrigation effect had a lot of effect. Now this year, we had much higher rains than we've had in ever since I can remember in the southeast. And that rainfall effect at the Arrow, we had a tremendous amount of rain within a very short period of time. And we believe that was what caused lodging. It was not wind. There was no tropical storm or anything. So we were majorly, probably was due to that rainstorm, and it was all which way. It was very difficult to get in there and cut it down. And you can see that we didn't get it all. And so this is going to make it very difficult to actually look at yields for this year, even though I did some ratings on what was left on the ground. And it's grown back. From that harvest in August, we've got now heights up over 6 feet again. So it's we're going to have to go back and recut that as well. In a second study, we are looking at means to reduce inputs as far as nitrogen is concerned, mainly. We've got a winter cover crop, and this is a collaborative work with Fort Valley State. They have a similar trial as well. And we're trying clover and lupin, blue lupin, and then we can change that to yellow lupin. The lupin was put into this study mainly because of another study where we tried sorghum in a rotation crop and found some very significant results of using lupin as a winter cover and having a lot higher production. So this was a trial where we had a randomized complete block design, two summer C4 biomass crops, and those were energy cane and elephant grass, and then five cover treatments. We had a negative control with nothing on there, positive control with had 200 kilograms per hectare of nitrogen, and then clover with nothing or 100 or 200, and then lupin. And this was on a tift and sandy loam soil, which was actually was very depleted. The production on this was very low. There was some erosion taking place. So we considered it very much a marginal land. And after the second year, we started seeing differences. In 2011, our yields were very low on the bottom at the 8.3 milligrams per hectare for energy cane, 6.5 for elephant grass, which is very low. But after our first year of treatment, the yields went up to 27 and 25 overall. And you can see that the nitrogen is the treatments with either 1 or 200 pounds of nitrogen were significantly better for both the energy cane and elephant grass. And if looking at the increase from 2011 to 2012, it was much more dramatic. You can see definite effects of the nitrogen. Now the covers, which is the green lupin and then the clover without anything, basically were not much different than the control. So right now we're not seeing the effects of the cover crops as per se, but we're going to continue this over a number of years to see if over a period of time the buildup and the residual will actually make an effect. So in conclusion, water availability is a primary yield constraint under normal rainfall or less than normal rainfall in the southeast, at least for the first 2 or 3 years. Until we can start seeing where the depletion of the soils, fertility of the soils. Nitrogen use efficiency is directly related to water availability. We saw that in that first trial. Harvesting time should be flexible depending on growth rates and conditions. That is, I think we kind of acknowledge that this year. We've got another study at the same location of harvest intervals. So we're actually harvesting mid-season and then late. Well, obviously, that's going to be a lot better if you have any potential for lodging. You're going to be able to get it before it lodges. And to this extent, the first 2 years of that study, there was no difference in yield, total yield, between two harvests versus one harvest. And so we'll see how that goes. Again, sustainability on that. And then the benefits of legume winter cover are not evident in the initial 2 years. And that's understandable. So in maybe 3 or 4 or 5 years, we're going to be able to look and see if these production practices will be sustainable or improve or reduce our input and needs. But initially, we're going to have to put on the inorganic fertilizer. I think that's it. Any questions? Cover crops, well, okay, yes, we just let them senesce in the perennials. That's the one thing. With the annuals, of course, you'd either have to roll it or spray it. We were just leaving it. And it's the timing of it's working out pretty well. We're about ready to harvest those crops now, and the cover crops have reseeded and regerminated. Didn't have any pictures of that, but we hope they'll reseed and not have to go back over the land.
Mm-hmm. Any do you think any biomass production from the cover crops?
Yes. Yeah, we're doing that as well. I didn't put that up here, but we are doing that. Mm-hmm. No, I think you're right. It needs to be on the marginal approach. But for standpoint of modeling and looking at what can be done and what the reduction of yield is under certain situations, the first study was basically to look at where you get maximum yields. We'll look at the inputs. We're going to put economic aspects of it and see if there's a break even, if a low amount of fertilizer is justified or not, based on the economics. And all this data will be going into modeling, Almanac and other economic modeling is the plan. We got probably a network of studies that will be going into that. Mm-hmm. Right, and we're looking at that. The lodging aspect is you never know when you're going to have an event. You got to let it grow to some extent and before you harvest, but you never know what kind of environment, whether hurricane or something goes through, you harvest what you can get. And we're going to look at that. The carbon uptake, we'll continue to see what is left, and we'll be assessing that overall, what's left on the ground, the uptake is, and base it on the yield we have, so that the whole aspect will be looked at overall, right? Thank you.